Wow.
Thank you.
Wow. Thank you. Soon I will have my hearing aids and I'll be able to understand all your words. Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Before I start, I have to give a couple of shout outs to my garden angels. First, to Rosie. I saw her. There she is. Rosie, very diligently, before we ripped out all the fern, which took up a lot of plants, because plants survived under those ferns. And many of them were geraniums that are considered now to be vintage geraniums. Rosie very diligently took many, many cuttings, and she's been rooting them in her yard, awaiting for the soil to be properly prepared, where she will bring them back and let them shine in their full glory. So once again, you will see the beautiful color here. And it is my goal, let's see if I accomplish it, to have at least some of those in by Easter. So that's number one. Rosie has also helped with weeding and other tasks around the garden. Secondly, I have other garden angels that contribute in other ways. Doris, you're here, and Betty, and I don't see her, Judy E. You've contributed in other ways, and I thank you as well. And I thank all those who prayed and offered many plants, of which I will eventually say, yes, you can start donating once I catch up, because it is our goal to have the entire building surrounded with greenery. Yay. And lastly, hats off to Reverend Rick, who's putting in a beautiful butterfly garden on the west end of this building, where he has butterfly plants that will attract the butterflies. And you should have received in your mailing this month butterfly seeds for butterfly plants. What do you call them? Butterfly plants? Milkweed. Milkweed. So that's my first shout out. My second shout out is to Reverend Dr. Kathy Ann Lewis, that many of my notes today, my talk today is predicated on the class I am taking for her. And to those of you who have a desire in the future to start taking classes, and just in case you have this desire, I happen to know that Reverend Patty is also one of our premier teachers in our movement, and she will soon be teaching classes here. How soon, I don't know, but she will be offering classes. I strongly urge you to take a class with her. She is amazing. She's an amazing minister. She's an amazing teacher. All of the quotes, and when I refer to Reverend Kathy Ann, I have her blessings to use her quotes and to use her materials. So with that, our theme for the month is honoring prayer, the path of prayer. And today, the talk is titled, Lift Up Your Eyes. And to that I would add, lift up your eyes and pray. For thousands of years, the spiritual practice of looking up has been used as a prelude to prayer in spiritual centers all around the world. Yet it took until this century for an Australian psychologist to figure out as to how it works. Now here, this morning, we have one of our very own to share her path of discovery of our teaching. My soul sister and return Peace Corps volunteer, Betty Redd.
Good morning. It's been a long time since I've been up here. I've missed it. My name is Betty Redd, and I was introduced into this philosophy almost 40 years ago, and I guess back in the 80s. And I was a science teacher, biology, for 30 years. And once, as a practitioner, I gave a talk on the Wednesday night service called Why Is It Called Science? And I have a very intimate knowledge with that, having dealt with that in the classroom for all those years. And what Ernest Holmes encourages us to do, insist almost that we do, is that we have to build our faith. We don't just have faith. I mean, that certainly wasn't my path. We have to build that muscle. And what I did to arrive at where I am now, that deep, deep knowing within me that thought is creative, is that through prayer and journaling and meditation, I kept track of the manifestations of my prayer request. And it is affirmative prayer. It's like, this thing went through my head. And in that film, The Secret, where there, if any of you remember, it's been quite a while since that came out, but there's a thing in there where the scientists are kind of keeping track of where the atomic particle lands, and it always lands where they're looking, every single time. And that's a minute kind of thing about how our thought is controlling reality, whatever we call reality. I've had a major injury in January. I fell, and I blew out 3 discs in my back. And I wasn't satisfied with barely being able to move. And so I knew what I had to do. I knew that I would not stay in that condition, that my reality was wholeness, that there was a path to returning to the flexibility, the mobility that I had known before. And so I threw myself into this project, and it wasn't without a certain amount of pain, but in the last couple of weeks, I have been able to walk 5 miles a day. To me, this is my demonstration. And I have to go into, sorry, I get so emotional about this. But I have to go into just supreme gratitude. And I read something by Carolyn Mace, how I visualize this moat of grace surrounding me and keeping me in that awareness of my wholeness. And it is through this grace of wholeness, gratitude, and faith that I have reached this point today. And I'm going to bottom line it here as I used to in my classroom. Thought is creative. Be careful what you're thinking. Okay.
Little did I know, growing up on a ranch in Northern California, that it would be a training ground for my future spiritual practice. Since it was my job to stay out of everyone's way, I would often climb to the top of a stack of bales and either look up at the sky, quite often thinking, "This is my God." Now, mind you, this was ages 5, 6, and 7. 7 was the age of First Communion, I think, in the Catholic Church. And I would often get up there and look up at the sky and say, "This is my God." Not what I was being fed in catechism. I was very opinionated at that very early age, even then. Or I would look across the field at my uncle's property and admire the beautiful fruit orchard and often wondered if the coast was clear and there wasn't any equipment in that one field that I could dash across, I could run over there and get fresh fruit. If someone were to ask where I was, the adults would often say, look up at the top of this haystack, or look up at the top of the giant boulders that dotted our farm. This practice of looking up goes into many, many traditions. For example, the Sufis, spinners, you've often seen pictures of them spinning. They're not looking at the ground, they're either looking out or looking up at approximately a 45 degree angle. It can be found in the great cathedrals and churches throughout the world. Once you walk in, you're not looking down. You have to look up. You have to look up at the altar. I remember walking into the Greek Orthodox Church in Long Beach, and their beautiful icons that line all of the walls. You have to look up, and it's usually at this 45 degree angle. Or in any of these places, particularly the Christian places, you look up at the Blessed Mother, and she, more often than not, is looking up. Today is Palm Sunday, right before Jesus was hung on the cross. Even he, in his final hours, was looking up and praying. First, I'll let you in on the secret of what the Australian psychologist discovered. He discovered that when he got agitated patients to look up at this 45 degree angle, for just a few minutes. Their minds quieted down. They quieted down. It allowed people in churches as well as a prelude to prayer. A simple secret that took thousands of years to figure out why. And yet, babies get it from the get-go. They get it from the start. Because we have little children here today. When they're babies, we hold them on our laps, and they have to look up at us. Or they're lying in their cribs, and they look up at us. And that's where they get their first sounds and emotions from the adults or the bigger people around them. Another fun fact. Did you know that all babies throughout the world are born with the ability to pick up any language spoken on this entire planet? But by the time they're 11 months old, they're already honed in on the language spoken around them. That's just a sidebar. To switch gears a little bit, I often heard at Christmas time people saying, Jesus is the reason for the season. Today is Palm Sunday. I believe that the Christ is the reason for this season, the season of Easter. I found it very interesting to note that in the four Gospels, only John, God, sorry, Kathy Ann, we're studying John. Only John mentions palms. The other three Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke say that people were carrying sticks. What is so important about this? Yesterday was the first day of the Jewish celebration of Passover. It's a celebration of the Jewish people's freedom. In ancient times, there was a pilgrimage. This pilgrimage was a sacred duty ordained by Scripture. Yet it was also a holiday, so there were a great many celebrations going on. And people poured into Jerusalem. Jerusalem, by the way, in the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary, one of its meanings is foundation or of peace, another is vision of peace. Also, certain palms were related to certain Jewish holidays. In the case of Palm Sunday, it was the date palms. In Mark's version of the of Palm Sunday, which is probably the oldest, people were shouting, Hosanna, blessed be who comes in the name of the Lord. On the surface, there is nothing remarkable about this event. Jesus was an ordinary man. He started with everything ordinary. For those of you who remember the parable about Jesus turning water into wine, they were ordinary jugs. They were jugs that were made of clay or earthen. He rides into Jerusalem on a donkey. A donkey is considered a sign of humility. So he wasn't a grand king. A donkey is considered a lowly animal. What Jesus was allowing was the Christ within, or the God within, to put it in our vernacular, to do the work through him. He never took credit for his work, for his miracles, because his faith in God and his faith of God. He never preached to the common person. He met them exactly where they were. He didn't lecture to anyone who was hungry for ordinary food. And here I have to say thank you, Dr. Kathy Ann, for driving this point home in our recent class. For example, I'm trying to drive home the point of the Christ within, or the God within. For example, if I am feeling uncourageous, that is when I'm going to feel the Christ. If I don't feel I measure up, that is when I have to prove the Christ. I have to prove there's a God within me that can rise up. I must be ever vigilant in what I do and what I say. For me, this is not an easy task. Again, thank you, Dr. Kathy Ann, for waking me up for about the 1,000th time. I have found that I've had to change some of my spiritual practices. I have now added Kathy Ann's version of the Lord's Prayer, which is actually an adaptation of Emma Curtis Hopkins' interpretation of the prayer, which is found in one of her books. It's either Resume or Mental Science. I recently had to read both books, so I get them confused. And yes, I say this prayer aloud every day 15 times. I have, as I previously said, Kathy Ann's permission to read it to you. And now I will share it. O God within, source of all life, origin of my soul, holy is your name and nature. Your kingdom, your realm of possibility and power is here now. Your will, which is always more inclusive than my own, is done within me. I will to thy will. Give me this day everything I need. Give me the material things that will allow me to thrive. Give me patience, wisdom, solutions, and all that I need to make the world a better place. Forgive my lack of confidence to command the law. I have been taught the power of the word. Let me use my words wisely. Don't let me be tempted by appearances. Don't let me be tempted by gossip or others' opinions or dramas. Don't let me be believe in evil. Keep me from all wrong thinking. For you are the realm of power and glory within me forever. Because thou art, I am. And so it is.